You're listening to a DM podcast.
In fact, I actually find it incredibly insulting when people on the spectrum are underestimated, marginalized, and also disrespected for being on the spectrum. Because even people on the spectrum can bring a lot of great things to the table. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a new episode of Mr. A+. Today's guest is an Australian author who will be releasing a new book very soon titled Love and Autism. Fun fact, she has interviewed me at least twice because she wanted me to be a big part of the book, along with other people on the spectrum. And yes, Love on the Spectrum comes into play at some point in today's episode. So, without further ado, let's all give a warm welcome for author Kay Kerr. Hello, Kay.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, Michael.
No, thank you. It's my pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on this podcast.
Oh, I've loved listening to the podcast. I've been a long-time listener.
You have?
Yeah. Yep. It's great. You have such an interesting range of guests. It's always fun
thank
to tune
you.
In and see what you're doing.
Yeah. I appreciate that. First off, how are you doing and your family?
Yeah, good. Good. Just sort of settling into the year. We had a bit of a strange start to the year, so I feel like I'm still a little bit stuck in like January, February, whereas it's almost April, so it's going quite quick. How are you going?
I'm doing pretty all right. This is one of my first questions. Was there a particular moment in your life that inspired you to decide that you wanted to be a writer?
That's a great question. I feel like I was a kid who loved stories and loved being read to. And then once I could read, I loved reading books all through my childhood and teen years, and very much was a massive reader and a massive lover of books. But I never really saw being an author as a job that just anyone could do. I felt like it was something a bit like a celebrity job, or like not just, it wasn't, I didn't know any authors. I didn't know that it was something that anyone could sort of just have a shot at and give a go. So I guess I channeled like that love of writing and reading into becoming a journalist, because that seemed like a job that could come out of being passionate about writing. So I followed that career for quite a number of years, and it wasn't until a journalist friend of mine released a book, a fiction book, and then I realized, oh, anyone can do that if they want to. Like, it's, you don't have to wait for permission. You don't have to necessarily have studied creative writing. Anyone can have a go at writing. So that was probably the biggest moment for me where I realized it was actually something that I could try, and it sort of gave me permission to start working on a project of my own.
That's really impressive. But I don't think I could ever be an author myself.
Why is that? You're an avid consumer of stories, though. You love TV and movies and that kind of thing. So
I don't really consider myself a writer.
You, I guess in acting, though, you play other people's characters and the roles that they've written. So you have sort of a connection with writing in that way.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I never really saw it that way.
Oh, and I think, or like when I think about shows and movies and stuff like that, I think so much depends on the writing that people maybe don't even necessarily see or understand that good writing, you know, often means a good movie or a good show, and bad writing can mean what was otherwise a great cast, or, you know, those things can be impacted by the writing very much.
Yeah, I suppose that's also really true. Although I have to admit that I'm not really a huge fan of reading.
Yeah. Do you ever listen to audiobooks?
Sadly, no.
No, that's fair enough. I think reading can be hard to get into in terms of like sitting in one place, reading the book, keeping like your mind and focus on the book. That's why I think audiobooks can make reading accessible for lots of people that otherwise don't get into it.
I suppose that is pretty true. Although 4 years ago, I did purchase a copy of that book, A Christmas Carol, because I was impressed by one of the film adaptions that I decided to purchase a copy of the book and read it myself.
Which film adaptation did you like?
Adaption, you mean?
Oh, adaption.
It's the one from 2009 with Jim Carrey as Ebenezer Scrooge.
I don't know that I've seen that one.
Oh. What is the inspiration behind your upcoming book, Love and Autism?
Yeah, so this is my third book. My first two were fiction, were novels for young adults. And particularly the second one that I wrote was a romantic comedy. So in the publication and promotion of that book, I was writing some opinion pieces, some nonfiction pieces about my own life and my own experiences dating and around love and autism as themes, I guess. And I was approached by a publisher about whether that would be a theme that I would be interested in looking at in a book. And I think I'm just a big lover of love and romance stories and also just unpacking relationships and connections of all kinds. So relationships in families and friendships and, you know, at school and work and the things that people love as well, like people's passions and interests and or their love of their animals. It's just all topics that I love to talk about in my day-to-day life. So it was great to have a chance to expand on that and also to get to talk to other autistic people about their lives and what they look like, because that was really exciting for me, that kind of piece together both my journalism background and my author background for this project, which was great. So thank you so much for being involved.
It was my pleasure. It was an honor. And I also have to say, it looks like we both love.
You're a big fan?
Well, I would say that I am. Do you consider yourself a hopeless romantic?
Yeah, definitely. What about you?
You and me both.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite romance movies or romances in shows or anything like that that you really like?
I used to be big on romantic comedies, but I kind of got out of it years ago.
There aren't as many anymore, I feel like, as they used to be.
Although I do have to admit that one romantic comedy that I did see last year as preparation for one of my previous guests is called Man Up.
Oh, I don't know if I've seen that. Who was the guest?
Tess Morris. She was writer of that film.
Cool.
Oh, and just before, you actually said something about the loving the concepts of family and friendship.
Yeah, that's right.
That actually reminds me of something. Do you mind if I type something while we speak? Because I think this would be very touching and also pretty important.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, I have to ask you, are you familiar with Hanna-Barbera?
I don't think so off the top of my head, no.
I'll explain. Hanna-Barbera was an animation company in the 20th century. They were behind Scooby-Doo, Wacky Races, The Flintstones, The Jetsons, Top Cat, Secret Squirrel, Yogi Bear, The Great Grape Ape Show.
I was thinking of Hanna as a person, so yes, I'm up to speed now. I know what you're talking about, so yes.
Hanna-Barbera was named after the surnames of William Hanna and Joseph Barbera.
Right.
They founded the company. I read that most of the cartoons they created revolved around close friendships or partnerships and even family.
That's amazing. See, I think they're such important, just as important and valid themes to explore as romantic love. So that's really cool to hear.
Yeah, of course. And that's one of the reasons why I appreciate Hanna-Barbera's work, because most of their work revolves around family, friendships, and partnerships, because it reflects theirs. Those things make those shows wholesome, unlike most of modern content.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot out there. Do you have a favorite from their catalog of shows that you liked?
Yep, there's heaps. There's The Flintstones, The Jetsons, Wacky Races, Yogi Bear, Snagglepuss.
We did talk about The Flintstones in the book, so people can read more about that when they get a copy.
Yeah, it's because I said that watching my parents interact, sometimes it's like watching episodes of The Flintstones. Especially where Fred and Wilma are concerned.
It was nice to learn more about your family and your upbringing
and
all of those people that we saw glimpses of on the show and to get to know a little bit more behind the scenes. That was great.
My story describes my past to exact detail.
Yeah, it was great. I loved the idea of giving people a picture of the autistic people that are interviewed and myself as well, from children through their life growing up, because I think sometimes people think of autism as this childhood condition, as if people grow out of it when they become adults. So they have an idea of autism as this is what it looks like in a child maybe, but they don't necessarily understand the bigger picture. So I thought by bringing the readers on the journey from childhood through to adulthood, they get to see a much more broad range of experiences.
In fact, I actually find it quite absurd that people believe that autism is something you grow out of or something that you receive from getting vaccinations.
There is so much misinformation and
problematic
and incorrect views. So I think the work that you're doing in this space is undoing lots of that, and I'm hoping in my own little way to be doing that as well.
In fact, I actually find it incredibly insulting when people on the spectrum are underestimated, marginalized, and also disrespected for being on the spectrum, because even people on the spectrum can bring a lot of great things to the table. For example, I was able to hold down a full-time job for almost 5 years.
Amazing.
How about
and
that?
You're doing what you love now. You're following your creative passion, which is incredible.
Yeah, of course. And people on the spectrum need to learn to pursue their passions and follow their dreams and follow their hearts instead of allowing others to determine their paths for them.
Yeah, I think that there just is a very limited understanding a lot of the time around what being autistic is like.
A lot of people see me as this advocate for autism, so I've decided to embrace that and accept it.
Yeah, and what does that mean for you? Like, is it just living your life in an open and proud way, or is there other stuff to it as well?
It's about showing people what autistic people and people with Asperger's can bring to the table, and that they're able to make contributions, and that they shouldn't be treated like they have a disability, because it's just a neurological disability. That means it just impacts their social skills and the way they learn things. They just learn things differently.
People think of the idea of disability as being inherently bad. And I know some autistic people view autism as a disability. Some people don't like that word. But I think a lot of the time, and the idea of the social model of disability, which is that often the things that are hardest for people with disability is the roadblocks in society that make it inaccessible for them.
So yeah,
it's more about making sure, you know, our society is supportive and embracing of all types of people, because neurodiversity is natural and everywhere and just part of the bigger picture of life.
In fact, I'm proud to be on the spectrum.
Me too.
You are?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I think I didn't get my diagnosis until I was in my 20s, so I think I had a lot of self-belief around the things that I struggled with and the things that I found hard or the things that I couldn't do that I sort of viewed through the lens of being faults of my own. Whereas having this understanding now of myself as autistic, I can see that that's part of my makeup and my being, and there are lots of things that I'm really good at that I think is at least partially because I'm autistic as well.
Hmm. The kind of autism that I have is called Asperger's. It's a branch of autism. It's a milder form of it.
Yeah, I think when I got my diagnosis, they said this is what they used to, or they would have called in the past, Asperger's as well. It's all just under the autism umbrella. And I think advocacy work like what you're doing, it can be beneficial to all autistic people, regardless of their support needs and other things they've got going on. Yeah. Look, I have an autistic child and she's amazing. I'm super thrilled about it.
Wow.
I think any preconceived idea of what your child should be or shouldn't be, I think parents need to think about that. You know, you don't have any control over the person that your child is or becomes. So all you can do is your best to support them and love them and make sure that they have all the opportunities in the world.
Yeah, of course. Like they say, everything happens for a reason. Being autistic is something that you shouldn't be ashamed of.
Something I'm learning as I'm getting older is that there's a lot to get from connecting with other autistic people, because when you're in conversation and in community with other autistic people, you're not feeling that same level of self-monitoring or comparison. It's just a lot freer, I find, communication and community.
Yeah, of course. We're going to get back to that little bit of conversation. One of my other questions was, how many books have you authored? But you've already answered that question. You've authored three.
Yeah, they've all been pandemic books too. Like I think we're not supposed to talk about that. But I mean, they've all been in the last 3 years, so it's been a busy time period.
So it turns out that all three of your books have had the themes of love and also autism and also coming of age.
Yeah, because I have the way my mind works and processes is autistic. I don't know that I could write a book without at least one autistic character in it. I think it's interesting to unpack the way that we see the world and the experiences that we can have. So that's always going to be, regardless of, you know, even if I wrote a fantasy or a book set in the future or anything, I think that I would want to make sure there was at least one autistic character in there.
That's wonderful. Very proud of you for making that decision. I salute you for it.
Thank you. We need more representation, definitely. I don't know if you've seen any shows that you think have good autistic representation or movies, that kind of thing. But there isn't a lot out there, really.
Actually, there is a certain show that I recently got out of, and it has a character that has autistic traits, but he doesn't have autism.
They don't say that he does.
The producers of this show have stated that this character does not have Asperger's. I'm referring to Sheldon from The Big Bang Theory.
All right. I don't think I've ever watched more than like the passing episode of that when it's been on TV, so I don't know. I know the character, of course. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who didn't know that show and that character.
Jim Parsons, who played him, he did a terrific job playing him. He was really amazing. But the character of Sheldon Cooper, he's just not a great representation of people with Asperger's or autism.
I have heard people say that about Sheldon.
He's basically a man-child, and he has a lot of childish qualities, like extremely impatient and extremely stubborn and always wanting things to go his way and always having a set routine. In fact, some people in the past have said that I remind them of Sheldon, but the thing is, I'm a bigger man than Sheldon in so many ways. I'm more flexible than him. I'm less stubborn than him. Unlike him, I'm honest about my behavior. And when I fuck up, I take responsibility for it.
Well, that's good that you have that reflection and that sort of understanding of it.
And I know when to give a woman space when she needs it. But another thing I've noticed about Sheldon is whenever he gets in trouble with women, he always ends up making it worse for himself.
Oh, dear.
And he has no problem throwing his friends under the bus because, according to him, he never does anything wrong.
Right. Well, I've recently watched Heartbreak High. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a wonderful autistic character on that show. It's maybe a bit intense in some of the themes and scenes, but the autistic character played by Chloe Hayden of Quinny is incredible, incredible representation. So I definitely think there are some changes in the more sort of modern space, which is positive. That's good. To see. Yeah.
How long does writing a book take to complete and publish?
That's a great question because it can really vary. The first book I spent years working on and off, because I was a journalist as well at the same time. So even just getting a first draft of that was a number of years and rewriting. Like then once I had a first draft, you rewrite it. And I didn't have publishing connections at the time. So it was very much trying to find a way to get my foot in the door, which I'm sure is, similar to your experience, or maybe not similar, but it's similar in the other arts as well. So I connected with a literary agent and then she pitched my first book out to publishers. So I think it probably would have been maybe 6 or 7 years for that first book. And then the second book I had written in the space before my first book got published. So probably was written in maybe 6 to 12 months. It was quite short compared to the first one because I had an idea of the process and what that looked like and I had a bit more experience. And then this book was quite quick, but it was interviewing as opposed to making up the story, if you know what I mean. So as long as I had my interviews done pretty early, it was more straightforward of a process to put it together. So I think from the time I signed the contract for this book to when it came out, it was about 18 months. So it is a long process. Even with my first two books, I wrote them first and then sold them, and then we edited them with the publishers, whereas this book sold it as an idea, as a proposal, and then once it's signed, then I have to write it. So that's a scary different way of doing things, because you've already sort of promised and committed and sold this idea, and then you have to follow through and you don't know.
Yeah.
They've read a sample chapter, but they haven't read the whole thing. So when you submit the whole thing, it's very scary. You know, it gets laid out, like it's coming out at the end of March. It was laid out and I was looking over the pages that were going to go to print in January. So it's just this sort of long process, but then at the end it all speeds up when you start getting the real copies of the book, and those start getting sent out to people, and you start doing interviews. It's really interesting process.
Yeah, seems like a very, very long process that you have to go through just to write a book.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, and a lot of work just on your own at your computer. So you're not getting a lot of, I guess, reward along the way. It's sort of you have to stay committed and say sitting at the desk, which can be tricky.
So I guess that sometimes it seems like a rewardless and thankless job.
And then it's nerve-wracking at the end. I don't think it's thankless, but it can feel like you're in the dark a little bit on your own sometimes, and then you get to the end, and then it's quite overwhelming when people start reading it, and that sort of public-facing side of things, which you do public-facing stuff always. That's part of your role, is being a public figure and doing things like your podcast and stuff. So I'm less practiced in the space than you are, probably. Like I find it. I get nervous, and I think we talked about you and acting, and you were saying you don't get nervous in that same way. No. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I actually enjoy being in public.
That's great. I wish that was me.
Well, it's just a matter of having confidence. You'd get there.
Yeah, I think I'm much more comfortable in the writing part of this job than the other part, but it's really exciting to connect with people and talk about the work as well.
Do you have plans for another book after Love and Autism?
I have quite a few different things on the go, like ideas and at different stages, but I think part of the process is letting those things grow in fruition before I sort of commit to publishing them. So I think I'm going to stay in the sort of creative writing space for a little while and let those ideas, those ideas grow. Yeah.
That's good. My next question is, why did you want me to be a part of your book?
I watched Love on the Spectrum, and I connected with quite a few of the interviewees. I really enjoyed the stories of people that shared on the show, and I thought that show for a lot of people was their first insight into autistic lives of watchers, you know what I mean? Like people watching that might not necessarily have a wider understanding of autism. So I thought if somebody watched the show and loved you or loved somebody from the show, particularly you, I think you were sort of a breakout star of that show.
So I've been told.
Okay to say, yeah. So I think if their starting point on learning about autism was that show, was Love on the Spectrum, and they really connected with you, I thought that might be an interesting way to show more of your life than what was on the screen in a different way, because writing is different, obviously, than TV, and we could talk about things that maybe weren't touched on in the show. And it would also, I think it would give people, I would hope people come, if they watched your show and then if they read the book, would come away with a wider understanding, more compassion, more understanding, and hopefully be entertained and enjoy the read as well. So that was kind of why I reached out, and I was so glad that you said yes. So thank you for that.
That's all right. It was my privilege. I was honored to be interviewed for it. So thank you.
It was great, because I find when I used to be a journalist and I would be interviewing people for my job, I very much felt like I had to play this role of neurotypical and journalist. And so it felt very much like acting in a way, and it would exhaust me a lot going through those interviews. But I found in connecting with the interviewees for this book, with you and the four other people, because we were connecting on that level of I'm autistic, you're autistic, let's talk about our lives and experiences, it was didn't drain me in that same way. It was really, really energizing and really positive.
Wow. Who else from the show did you interview?
No one else from the show. You're the only one from the show, but four other people from a wide range. Somebody that I knew through the sort of book world, somebody that I reached out with through their articles that they had written for SBS, and then two other people that I connected with through an autism support agency.
Wow. My next question is, what is the importance of publishing a book about promoting the relationship between autism and the concept of love?
I think that a lot of what is written about autism can be quite dry and quite deficit-based and can be quite medical. I thought love was a really interesting gateway into talking about feelings, emotions, relationships, all of those things that I think flesh out the idea of a person and their life and what it looks like a lot more than this is a list of autistic traits, this is what it looks like. I wanted to show full lives of five incredible people doing different things in different parts of the country, different ages, everything, and just explore. I think also because a lot of the time autistic people are, you know, communication deficits is something that is part of the diagnostic criteria. We're told we have deficits in communication. So as much as I feel like I'm unpacking that a little bit more as I get older and learn more, and I'm realizing that autistic people often have a different way of communicating, but it's not less, it's just different. And so I wanted to explore through lives and the relationships of people, I guess, what that looks like. And love just felt like, because I love, as we were talking about, it just felt like a really good way into talking about people's lives and all the different times throughout their lives.
Yeah, of course. In fact, one trait that I've noticed about people with autism is that when they're talking to someone, they often look at their surroundings and the person they're talking to, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not listening.
Absolutely. I do that. I used to force myself more to look at people or look near their eyes so it looked like I was looking at their eyes, but I'm better able to listen and communicate if I'm letting myself be my natural way.
In fact, when you were diagnosed with autism in your 20s, I was diagnosed when I was 5.
Yeah.
And I was constantly off in my own world as a kid. And to this day, I kind of look back on it with some embarrassment.
I don't know. It's easy to look at other people and think they've got it sorted, or it's like they're people are good at hiding their struggles sometimes, I think.
I suppose that's also true.
Yeah. But I think because I was a kid who always had my nose in a book, and that was how I sort of avoided social situations a lot of the time. That was a quite, an accepted way of being for a young kid, so it maybe wasn't noticed. And I think often girls aren't picked up on as being autistic as much or as early.
Yeah, it's more common in males.
Yeah, diagnosis is definitely.
Another question I have is, what is your experience of love?
Oh, that's a great question. Do you mean romantic, or do you mean, like, as we've said, we've talked about family and friendship and stuff as well. I met my partner. I've been with my partner for lots of years now. So I met my partner when I was 18, just at a bar, at my university bar. But we have been a lot of different versions of ourselves since then, which is, I'm in my mid-30s now, so I'm definitely not the same person I was at 18, but my idea and concept of love is being with someone that you are both on your own journeys and you're both working on your own journeys, but you are wanting the best version of that other person and helping them become that. Because
of course.
That's how I view. And we have that's a family good. Now and, our daughter. And so I definitely want to model autism, being proud of autistic identity and positive to pass that on to my kid, because I think
it's really wonderful.
I think that's really important for young autistic kids to feel proud about their identity and about the things that they do differently, because it can be tricky. Like we talked about this in the book, you know, school years, particularly as you get into high school, can be awful sometimes. So
yes, I know.
You had that blessing of a strong family unit behind you, and so that's what I want to provide as well as modeling that sort of positive autistic identity.
Are you and your partner married?
We are, yeah.
That's wonderful. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. I found it very overwhelming, the actual wedding day. I think I was in my 20s. I don't know, looking back now, now that I know myself a little bit better and know my autistic traits, I don't know if I would have this big day with, you know, over 100 people and all the attention being on me. It's, I found that quite day. Overwhelming. Yeah, but it's a lot. I don't know. Some people are better at managing that kind of attention, but I'm definitely not.
I also like to ask you, do you have any love languages?
Ah, yes. Well, I did a part in the book which was talking about autistic love languages. Another autistic writer had written these autistic love languages, which I thought was really interesting. And it was like, I can't think of them all at the moment, but it was like info dumping, like sharing your special interests with someone and things like that, which I thought was good. Are these the autistic love languages or are these the original ones?
Gift giving, acts of service, words of affirmation, quality time and physical touch.
I think words of affirmation and quality time. Interested, what about you?
All five of them.
That's fair enough. I think everyone's is all five of them to some extent, don't you?
Yeah.
In some way.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
Now, I believe we're on to our Ask Mr. A Plus segment. That's a segment where the guest has the opportunity to ask me questions, anything at all.
Amazing. Yes. Okay. So what are you working on at the moment, or what are you excited about that you're doing at the moment?
I'm still working on the podcast, which is going well, as always. I'll be attending 2 autism awareness events next week, actually.
I think I saw the Sydney one. That's exciting. How do you go with those events? Like, are you up on a stage talking to a room full of people? Is that how it goes?
I think so. And I'll also be attending a gala ball in Coffs Harbour at the end of next month.
That's amazing. Does that mean you get to wear a suit and get
of course
dressed up and fancy? Yep.
I'll be attending it as a celebrity guest speaker.
Cool.
It's called the Spectrum Spectacular Gala Ball. I mean, it's to bring bus stop films to Coffs Harbour to establish a bus stop films campus there.
Cool.
Bus stop films is basically a filming school for people with disabilities.
That's all really exciting. How do you go in the lead up to those events? Like, do you need a bit of preparation time or downtime, or do you just take it all in your stride?
I just do my best to take it on board. If I'm in a room where there's too much noise, I would need some alone time.
I do the same when I have had writing festivals that I've spoken at. I ask for a quiet space alone, but not in the green room with everybody, because that can be very noisy.
Yeah, of course. In fact, in noisy rooms, I would bring earplugs.
Yeah.
Do you have any other questions?
What has been your favorite part of doing this podcast? Because you have had so many interesting guests.
It's that the guests are the main thing. The main thing I love about doing the podcast. The amazing people that I've spoken to.
I find it really interesting, the guests that you've had.
I do have one regret.
Oh, what's that?
When I did the podcast with Susie Porter, I should have done it with her in person.
Oh, you'd love to have met her.
Yeah, because I really want to meet her, and I'd love to work with her on something. And
yeah,
she never got a chance to receive any of my famous bear hugs.
That is a missed opportunity, but, you know, you never know where you might cross paths again.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Oh, you're doing an amazing job. I was listening to Justin Long's podcast a little while ago. I had a big long transit and you popped up on an episode of that. That was pretty cool.
Yes, I did appear on his podcast once.
You've done some amazing, amazing work since the show.
Thank you.
That's cool. Cool. Well, thank you so much for having me, for making the time and for being in the book as well. If your copies haven't arrived, I hope they arrive soon. And you get, even though you're not a big reader, you get to sort of flick through and see yourself in there.
I'm actually looking forward to having a read of the book. It was my pleasure to have you on this podcast and to be interviewed by you for your book.
We flipped places today.
Well, Kate, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come on this podcast. I really appreciate it. Just before we knock off, the title of your book is Love and Autism, right?
Yep.
My question is, where can people find it and when is it going to be released?
Thank you so much. Yeah, so it's out now. People can find it at all bookstores or online places like Booktopia. It's out with Penn McMillan, and we've also recorded an audiobook. So wherever you get your audiobooks from, whether it's Apple or Audible, those places. But yeah, thank you so much again for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for taking time out of your own schedule to come on this podcast. I really appreciate it. It was an honor having you on.
I appreciate it too. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you, Kay.